One afternoon, when the sky was growing cold, there was a frantic knocking on Nanny's door. It turned out to be caused by Anna Grammer, who almost fell into the room. She looked terrible, and her teeth were chattering. Nanny and Tiffany stood her by the fire, but she started talking before her teeth had warmed up.
Skulls,
she managed. Oh dear, thought Tiffany. What about them, she said, as Nanny Og hurried in from the kitchen with a hot drink.
Me, most reason, skulls.
Yes, what about them? Anna Grammer took a swig from the mug.
What did you do with them?
She gasped, cocoa dribbling down her chin. Buried them.
Oh no, why?
They were skulls. You can't just leave skulls lying about. Anna Grammer looked around wildly.
Can you lend me a shovel, then?
Anna Grammer, you can't dig up Miss Treason's grave.
But I need some skulls,
Anna Grammer insisted.
The people there, well, it's like the olden days. I whitewashed that place with my own hands. Have you any idea how long it takes to whitewash over black? They complained. They won't have anything to do with crystal therapy. They just frown and say Miss Treason gave them sticky black medicine that tasted horrible but worked. And they keep on asking me to sort out stupid little problems, and I don't have a clue what they're about. And this morning there was this old man who's dead, and I've got to lay him out and sit up with him tonight. Well, I mean, that's so yuck.
Tiffany glanced at Nanny Og, who was sitting in her chair and puffing gently on her pipe. Her eyes were gleaming. When she saw Tiffany's expression, she winked and said, I'll leave you girls to have a little chat, shall I? Yes, please, Nanny. And please don't listen at the door.
To a private conversation? The very idea, said Nanny, and went into the kitchen.
Will she listen? Whispered Anna Grammer. I'll just die if Mistress Weatherwax finds out.
Tiffany sighed. Did Anna Grammer know anything?
Of course she'll listen, she said. She's a witch. But she said she wouldn't.
She'll listen, but she'll pretend that she hasn't, and she won't tell anyone, said Tiffany. It's her cottage, after all. Anna Grammer looked desperate.
And on Tuesday, I've probably got to go and deliver a baby out in some valley somewhere. An old woman came and gabbled at me about it.
That'll be Mrs. Owlslick, said Tiffany. I did leave some notes, you know. Didn't you read them?
I think perhaps Mrs. Earwig tidied them away, Anna Grammer said.
You should have looked at them. It took me an hour to write them all down, said Tiffany reproachfully. Three pieces of paper. Look, calm down, will you? Didn't you learn anything about midwifery?
Mrs. Earwig said giving birth is a natural action and nature should be allowed to take its course, said Anna Grammer,
and Tiffany was sure she heard a snort from behind the kitchen door.
I know a soothing chant, though.
Well, I expect that will be a help, said Tiffany weakly.
Mrs. Earwig said that village women know what to do, said Anna Grammer hopefully. She says to trust in their peasant wisdom.
Well, Mrs. Obble was the old woman who called, and she has just got simple peasant ignorance, said Tiffany. She puts leaf mould on wounds if you don't watch her. Look, just because a woman's got no teeth doesn't mean she's wise. It might just mean she's been stupid for a very long time. Don't let her anywhere near Mrs. Owlslick until after the baby. It's not going to be an easy birth as it is.
Well, I know plenty of spells that would help.
No, no magic. Only to take away pain. Surely you know that.
Yes, but Mrs. Earwig says,
why don't you go and ask Mrs. Earwig to help you then? Anna Grammer stared at Tiffany. That sentence had come out a bit louder than intended, and then Anna Grammer's face slid into what she probably thought was a friendly expression. It made her look slightly mad.
Hey, I've got a great idea, she said, as bright as a crystal that was about to shatter. Why don't you come back to the cottage and work for me?
No, I've got other work to do.
But you're so good at the messy stuff, Tiffany, said Anna Grammer in a syrupy voice. It seems to come naturally to you.
I started at the lambing when I was small, that's why. Small hands can get inside and untangle things. And now Anna Grammer had that hunted look that she got when she was dealing with anything she didn't immediately understand.
Inside the sheep? You mean up its...
Yes, of course.
Untangle things?
Sometimes the lambs try to get born backward, said Tiffany.
Backward?
Muttered Anna Grammer weakly. And it can be worse if there's twins.
Twins?
Then Anna Grammer said, as if spotting the flaw.
But look, I've seen lots of pictures of shepherds and sheep, and there's never anything like that. I thought it was all just standing around and watching the sheep eat grass.
There were times when you could feel that the world would be a better place if Anna Grammer got the occasional slap around the ear. The silly, unthinking insults, her huge lack of interest in anyone other than herself, the way she treated everyone as if they were slightly deaf and a bit stupid. It could make your blood boil. But you put up with it because every once in a while you saw through it all. Inside, there was this worried, frantic little face watching the world like a bunny watching a fox and screaming at it in the hope that it would go away and not hurt her. And a meeting of witches, who were supposed to be clever, had handed her this steading that would be a hard job for anyone. It didn't make sense. No, it didn't make sense. It only happens when there's a difficult lambing, said Tiffany while her mind raced. And that means it's out in the dark and the cold and the rain. Artists never seem to be around then. It's amazing.
Why are you looking at me like that? Said Anna Grammer. Like I'm not here.
Tiffany blinked. All right, she thought. How am I supposed to deal with this? Look, I'll come and help you with the laying out, she said, as calmly as she could manage. And I expect I can help with Mrs. Owslick. Or ask Petulia, she's good. But you'll have to do the watching by yourself.
Sitting up all night with a dead person, said Anna Grammer and shivered.
You can take a book to read, said Tiffany.
I suppose I could draw a circle of protection around the chair, Anna Grammer muttered.
No, said Tiffany, no magic. Mrs. Earwig must have told you this.
But a circle of protection,
it draws attention. Something might turn up to see why it's there. Don't worry, it's just to make the old people happy.
When you say something might turn up, Anna Grammer began.
Tiffany sighed. All right, I'll sit up with you just this once, she said. Anna Grammer beamed. And as for skulls, said Tiffany, just wait a moment. She went upstairs and got the Boffo catalogue, which she'd hidden in her old suitcase. She came back with it carefully rolled up and handed it over. Don't look at it now, she said. Wait until you're alone. You might find it gives you ideas. Okay, I'll come and meet you around 7 tonight. When Anna Grammer had gone, Tiffany sat and counted under her breath. When she'd got to 5, Nanny Ogg came and vigorously dusted a few ornaments before saying, Oh, has your little friend gone? Do you think I'm being silly? Said Tiffany. Nanny stopped pretending to do housework.
I don't know what you're talking about, not having listened, she said. But if I had been listening, I think you won't get any thanks, that's what I'd think.
Granny shouldn't have meddled, said Tiffany.
Shouldn't have, eh? Said Nanny, her face blank.
I'm not stupid, Nanny, said Tiffany. I've worked it out.
Worked it out, have you? There's a clever girl, said Nanny Ogg, sitting down in her chair. And what is it you've worked out, then?
This was going to get difficult. Nanny was usually cheerful all the time, but when she went solemn, like she was now, it could make you nervous. But Tiffany pressed on. I couldn't take on a cottage, she said. Oh, I can do most of the everyday stuff, but you need to be older to run a steading. There's things people won't tell you if you're 13, hat or not. But Granny put it about that she was suggesting me, and so everyone saw it as a contest between me and Anna Grammer, right? And they chose her because she's older and sounds really competent. And now it's all falling apart. It's not her fault she was taught magic instead of witchcraft. Granny just wants her to fail so that everyone will know that Mrs. Earwig is a bad teacher. And I don't think that's good.
I wouldn't be too quick to decide what it is Esme Weatherwax wants if I was you, said Nanny Ogg. I won't say a word, mind you. You go off and help your friend if you want. But you've still got to work for me, okay? That's only fair. How's the feet?
They feel fine, Nanny. Thank you for asking. More than 100 miles away, Mr. Fusel Johnson knew nothing about Tiffany, Nanny Ogg, or indeed anything very much except for clocks and watches, which he made for a living. He also knew how to lime wash a kitchen, which was an easy and cheap way to get a nice white look, even if the stuff was a bit runny. And therefore he had no idea why several handfuls of the white powder fountained up out of the mixing bowl before he could add the water, hung in the air for a moment like a ghost, and vanished up the chimney. In the end, he put it down to too many trolls moving into the area. This wasn't very logical, but such beliefs generally aren't. And the Wintersmith thought, lime enough to make a man. That night, Tiffany sat up with Anna Grammer and old Mr. Tissot, except that he was lying down because he was dead. Tiffany had never liked watching over the dead. It wasn't exactly something you could like, It was always a relief when the sky turned grey and the birds started to sing. Sometimes in the night, Mr. Tissot made little noises. Except, of course, it wasn't Mr. Tissot who'd met death hours ago. It was just the body he'd left behind, and the sounds it made were really no different from the noises made by an old house as it cooled down. It was important to remember these things around 2 o'clock in the morning, vitally important when the candle flickered. Anagramma snored. No one with a nose that small should be able to make a snore that loud. It was like ripping planks. Whatever evil spirits might be around on this night, that sound would probably scare them away. It wasn't the part that was so bad, and Tiffany could live with the it was the gap between them, after the had wound up, but before the long letdown of the that really got on her nerves. It was never the same length twice. Sometimes there was one right after the other. Then there might be such a huge gap after the that Tiffany found herself holding her breath while she waited for the. It wouldn't have been so bad if Anagramma had stuck to one length of pause. Sometimes she stopped altogether, and it was a blessed silence until a festival of began, usually with a faint lip-smacking sound as Anagramma shifted position in her chair. "Where are you, Flower Lady? What are you? You should be sleeping." The voice was so faint that Tiffany might not have heard it at all if she hadn't been all tensed up waiting for the next. And here it came. "Let me show you my world, Flower Lady. Let me show you all the colours of ice." About three-quarters of Tiffany thought, "Oh no, will he find me if I reply?" No, if he could find me, he'd be here. My hand isn't itching. The other quarter thought, "A god or godlike being is talking to me, and I could really do without the snoring, Anagramma, thank you so much." "I said I was sorry," she whispered into the dancing candlelight. "I saw the iceberg. It was very, nice of you. I have made many more." Many more icebergs, thought Tiffany. Great big, freezing, floating mountains that look like me, dragging fog banks and snowstorms behind them. I wonder how many ships will run into them. "You shouldn't have gone to all that trouble," she whispered. "Now I am growing stronger. I am listening and learning. I am understanding, humans." Outside the cottage window, a thrush began to sing. Tiffany blew out the candle, and a grey light crept into the room. Listening and learning. How could a blizzard understand things? "Tiffany, Flower Lady, I am making myself a man." There was a complicated grunting as Anagrammas and ran into each other, and she woke up. "Ah," she said, stretching her arms and yawning. She looked around. "Well, that seemed to go well." Tiffany stared at the wall. What did he mean, making himself a man? Surely he... "You didn't fall asleep, did you, Tiffany?" said Anagramma, in what she probably thought was a playful voice. "Not even for one tiny little second?" "What?" said Tiffany, glaring at the wall. "Oh, no, I didn't." People were moving around downstairs. After a while, there was a creaking on the stairs, and the low door was pushed open. A middle-aged man, looking sheepishly at the floor, uttered, "Ma'am says, would you ladies like some breakfast?"
"Oh, no, we couldn't possibly take what little you have," Anagramma began.
"Yes, please, we will be grateful," said Tiffany, louder and quicker. The man nodded and shut the door.
"Oh, how could you say that?" said Anagramma, as his footsteps creaked down. "These are poor people. I thought you would..."
"Shut up, will you?" snapped Tiffany.
"Just shut up and wake up. These are real people. They're not some kind of idea. We will go down there, and we will eat breakfast, and we'll say how good it is, and then we will thank them, and they will thank us, and we will go. And that will mean everyone has done the right thing by custom, and that will be what's important to them. Besides, they don't think they're poor, because everyone around here is poor. But they're not so poor they can't afford to do the right things. That would be poor." Anagramma was staring at her with her mouth open. "Be careful what you say next," said Tiffany, breathing heavily. "In fact, don't say anything." Breakfast was ham and eggs. It was eaten in polite silence. After that, in the same silence except that it was outdoors, they flew back to what people would probably always think of as Miss Treason's cottage.
There was a small boy loitering outside. As soon as they landed, he blurted out, "Mrs. Obble says the baby's on the way, and she said you'd give me a penny for going." "You have got a bag, haven't you?" said Tiffany, turning to Anagramma.
"Yes, lots."
"I mean a call-out bag. You know, you keep it by the door with everything in it that you'll need if..." Tiffany saw the terrified look on the girl's face. "Okay, so you haven't got a bag. We'll just have to do the best we can. Give him a penny and let's go."
"Can we get anyone to help if it goes wrong?"
Anagramma asked as they left the ground. "We are the help," said Tiffany simply. "And since this is your steading, I'm giving you the really tough job," which was keeping Mrs. Obble occupied. Mrs. Obble wasn't a witch, although most people thought she was. She looked like one. That is, she looked like someone who'd bought everything in the Boffo catalogue on the day of the special offer on hairy warts, and she was mildly crazy and should not have been allowed within a mile of any mother who was going to have her first baby, since she would very conscientiously tell them, or cackle at them anyway, about all the things that could go wrong in a way that made it sound as if they would all go wrong. She wasn't a bad nurse, though, once you stopped her from putting a leaf mould poultice on everything. Things went noisily and with a certain amount of fuss, but nothing like Mrs. Obble had predicted, and the result was a baby boy who was not a bouncing baby, but only because Tiffany caught him. Anagramma didn't know how to hold babies. She did look good in a pointy hat, though, and since she was clearly older than Tiffany and did hardly any of the work, the other women assumed she was in charge. Tiffany left her holding the baby, the right way up this time, and looking proud, and began the long flight back through the woods to Tir na n Og. It was a crisp evening, but there was a bit of wind that blew stinging snow crystals off the trees. It was an exhausting journey and very, very cold. "He can't know where I am," she repeated to herself as she flew back in the dusk. "And he's not very clever. Winter has to end sometime, right?"
How?"
said her second thoughts. "Miss Tick said you just have to be there, but surely you have to do something else." "I suppose I'll have to walk around with my shoes off," Tiffany thought. "Everywhere?" her second thoughts wondered, as she swerved between the trees. "It's probably like being a queen," her third thoughts said. "She just has to sit in a palace and maybe do a bit of driving around in a big coach and waving, and all over a huge kingdom, monarching is going on." But as she avoided more trees, she also tried to avoid the little scurrying thought that was trying to creep into her mind. Sooner or later, one way or the other, he will find you. And how can he make himself a man? Assistant Postmaster Grote did not believe in doctors. They made you ill, he thought. So he put sulphur in his socks every morning, and he was proud to say that he had never had a day's illness in his life. This may have been because not many people dared to come very close to him because of the smell. Something did, though. A gale roared into his post office when he was opening the door one morning and blew his socks clean off. This was reported in the newspapers, and shortly afterward a widow wrote to him saying how much she admired a man who really understood about hygiene. They later were seen walking together. So it's an ill wind, as they say. And no one heard the Wintersmith say, "Sulphur enough to make a man." Nanny Og was sitting by the fire when Tiffany came in, stamping snow off her boots.
"You look frozen all through," Nanny said. "You need a glass of hot milk with a drop of brandy in it, that's what you need."
"Oh, yes," Tiffany managed through chattering teeth. "Get me one too, then, will you?" said Nanny.
"Only joking. You get warmed up, I'll see to the drink."
Tiffany's feet felt like blocks of ice. She knelt by the fire and stretched out her hand to the stock pot on its big black hook. It bubbled all the time. "Get your mind right and balance. Reach out and cup your hands around it and concentrate. Concentrate on your freezing boots." After a while, her toes felt warm, and then...
"Ow!"
Tiffany pulled her hands away and sucked at her fingers.
"Didn't have your mind right," said Nanny Og from the doorway.
"Well, you know, that's just a bit difficult when you've had a long day and you didn't sleep much and the Wintersmith is looking for you," snapped Tiffany.
"The fire doesn't care," said Nanny, shrugging. "Hot milk coming up."
Things were a little better when Tiffany had warmed up. She wondered how much brandy Nanny had added to the milk. Nanny had done one for herself, with probably some milk added to the brandy.
"Isn't this nice and cosy?" said Nanny after a while.
"Is this going to be the talk about sex?" said Tiffany. "Did anyone say there was going to be one?" said Nanny, innocently. "I kind of got the feeling," said Tiffany. "And I know where babies come from, Mrs. Ogg. I should hope so. I know how they get there, too. I live on a farm, and I've got a lot of older sisters."
"All right," said Nanny. "Well, I see you're pretty well prepared for life, then. Not much left for me to tell you, I expect. And I've never had a god pay any attention to me, as far as I can recall. Flattered, are you?"
"No." Tiffany looked into Nanny's smile.
"Well, a bit," she admitted.
"And frightened of him?"
"Yes."
"Well, the poor thing hasn't quite got it right yet. He started off so well with the ice roses and everything. And then he wanted to show you his muscles. Typical. But you shouldn't be frightened of him. He should be frightened of you."
"Why?"
"Because I'm pretending to be the flower woman."
"Because you're a girl. It's a poor lookout if a bright girl can't wind a boy around her little finger. He's smitten with you. You could make his life a misery with a word. Why, when I was a girl, a young man nearly threw himself off the Lancre Bridge because I spurned his advances."
"He did? What happened?"
"I unspurned him. Well, he looked so pretty standing there, and I thought, that's a good-looking bum on him if ever I saw one." Nanny sat back. "And think about poor old Grebo. He'll fight anything. But Esme's little white kitten leapt straight at him, and now the poor dear won't come into this room without peering round the door to check she's not here. You should see his poor little face when he does, too. It's all wrinkled up. Of course, he could tear her into bits with one claw, but he can't now, because she's fixed his head."
"You're not saying I should try to tear the Wintersmith's face off, are you?"
"No, no. You don't have to be as blunt as that. Give him a little hope. Be kind but firm. He wants to marry me."
"Good."
"Good? That means he wants to stay friendly. Don't say no, don't say yes. Act like a queen. He's got to learn to show you some respect. What are you doing?"
"Writing this down," said Tiffany, scribbling in her diary.
"You don't need to write it down, love," said Nanny. "It's written down in you somewhere, on a page you haven't read yet, I reckon. Which reminds me, these came when you were out."
Nanny fished down among the seat cushions and pulled out a couple of envelopes. "My boy Sean is the postman, so he knew you'd moved."
Tiffany nearly snatched them out of her hand.
"Two letters."
"Like him, do you? You're a young man in the castle," said Nanny.
"He's a friend who writes to me," said Tiffany haughtily.
"That's right. That's just the look and voice you need for dealing with the Wintersmith," said Nanny, looking delighted. "Who does he think he is, daring to talk to you? That's the way."
"I shall read them in my room," said Tiffany.
Nanny nodded. "One of the girls did us a lovely casserole," she said. Famously, Nanny never remembered the names of her daughters-in-law. "Yours is in the oven. I'm off to the pub. Early start tomorrow."
Alone in her room, Tiffany read the first letter. To the unaided eye, not much happened on the chalk. It had avoided history. It was a place of small things. Tiffany enjoyed reading about them. The second letter seemed to be much the same as the first one, until the bit about the ball. He'd gone to a ball? It was at the house of Lord Diver, who was a neighbour. He'd danced with his daughter, who was called Iodine, because Lord Diver thought that it was a nice name for a girl. They'd had three dances, and ice cream. Iodine had shown him her watercolours. How could he sit there and write such things?
Tiffany's eyes moved on, over the everyday news like the bad weather and what had happened to old Aggie's leg, but the words didn't enter her head because it was on fire. Who did he think he was, dancing with another girl?
"You danced with the Wintersmith," her third thought said.
"All right, but what about the watercolours?"
"The Wintersmith showed you the snowflakes," said her third thoughts.
"But I was just being polite."
Perhaps he was just being polite, too.
"All right, but I know those aunts," Tiffany thought furiously. "They've never liked me because I'm only a farm girl, and Lord Diver's very rich and his daughter is his only child. They're scheming. How could he sit there and write as if eating ice cream with another girl was a perfectly normal thing to do? That was as bad as, well, something pretty bad at least. As for looking at her watercolours..."
"He's just a boy you happen to write to," said her third thoughts.
"Yes, well..."
"Yes, well, what?" her third thoughts persisted. They were getting on Tiffany's nerves. "Your own brains ought to have the decency to be on your side."
"Just yes, well, okay," she thought angrily.
"You're not being very sensible about this.
"Oh, really? Well, I've been sensible all day. I've been sensible for years. I think I'm owed 5 minutes of being really unreasonably angry, don't you?"
"There's some casserole downstairs, and you haven't eaten since breakfast," said her third thoughts. "You'll feel better after you've eaten something."
"How can I eat stew when people are looking at watercolours? How dare he look at watercolours?"
But her third thoughts were right.
Not that this made things any better. If you're going to be angry and miserable, you might as well be so on a full stomach.
She went downstairs and found the casserole in the oven. It smelled good. Nothing but the best for dear old Mum. She opened the cutlery drawer for a spoon. The drawer stuck. She rattled it, pulled at it, and swore a few times, but it stayed stuck.
"Oh, yes, go ahead," said a voice behind her. "See how much help that is. Don't be sensible and stick your hand under the top and carefully free up the stuck item. Oh, no. Rattle and curse, that's the way."
Tiffany turned. There was a skinny, tired-looking woman standing by the kitchen table. She seemed to be wearing a sheet draped around her and was smoking a cigarette. Tiffany had never seen a woman smoke a cigarette before, but especially never a cigarette that burned with a fat red flame and gave off sparks.
"Who are you, and what are you doing in Mrs. Ogg's kitchen?" Tiffany said sharply.
This time it was the woman who looked surprised.
"You can hear me," she said, "and see me."
"Yes," Tiffany snarled.
"And this is a food preparation area, you know."
"You're not supposed to be able to see me."
"Well, I'm looking at you."
"Hold on a minute,"
said the woman, frowning at Tiffany.
"You're not just a human, are you?"
She squinted oddly for a moment and then said,
"Oh, you're her. Am I right? The new summer?"
"Never mind me. Who are you?" said Tiffany.
"And it was only one dance."
"Annoyer, goddess of things that get stuck in drawers," said the woman. "Pleased to meet you."
She took another puff at the flaming cigarette, and there were more sparks. Some of them dropped on the floor, but didn't seem to do any damage.
"There's a goddess just for that," said Tiffany.
"Well, I find lost corkscrews and things that roll under furniture," said Annoyer offhandedly. "Sometimes things that get lost under sofa cushions, too. They want me to do stuck zippers, and I'm thinking about that. But mostly, I manifest whensoever people rattle stuck drawers and call upon the gods."
She puffed on her cigarette.
"Got any tea?"
"But I didn't call on anyone."
"You did," said Annoyer, blowing more sparks. "You cussed. Sooner or later, every curse is a prayer."
She waved the hand that wasn't holding the cigarette, and something in the drawer went pling.
"It'll be all right now. It was the egg slicer. Everyone has one, and no one knows why. Did anyone in the world ever knowingly go out one day and buy an egg slicer? I don't think so."
Tiffany tried the drawer. It slid out easily.
"About that tea,"
said Annoyer, sitting down. Tiffany put the kettle on. "You know about me?" she asked.
"Oh, yes," said Annoyer. "It's been quite some time since a god fell in love with a mortal. Everyone wants to see how it turns out."
"Fell in love?"
"Oh, yes."
"And you mean the gods are watching?"
"Well, of course," said Annoyer. "Most of the big ones don't do anything else these days. But I'm supposed to do zippers, oh yes, and my hands get very stiff in this weather."
Tiffany glanced at the ceiling, which was now full of smoke.
"They're watching all the time," she said, aghast.
"I heard you're getting more interest than the war in Clachistan, and that was pretty popular," said Annoyer, holding out her red hands. "Look, chilblains. Not that they care, of course."
"Even when I'm having a wash,"
said Tiffany.
The goddess laughed nastily.
"Yeah, and they can see in the dark, too. Best not to think about it."
Tiffany looked up at the ceiling again. She'd been hoping for a bath tonight.
"I'll try not to," she said darkly, and added, "Is it hard being a goddess?"
"It has its good days," said Annoyer.
She stood with her cigarette arm cupped at the elbow by her other hand, holding the flaming, sparking thing close to her face. Now she took a sharp pull, raised her head, and blew a cloud of smoke out to join the smog on the ceiling. Sparks fell out of it like rain.
"I haven't been doing drawers long. I used to be a volcano goddess."
"Really?" said Tiffany. "I'd never have guessed."
"Oh, yeah. It was good work, apart from the screaming," said Annoyer,
and then added in a bitter tone of voice,
"And the god of storms was always raining on my lava. That's men for you, dear. They rain on your lava."
"And look at watercolours," said Tiffany. Annoyer's eyes narrowed.
"Someone else's watercolours?"
"Yes."
"Men. They're all the same,"
said Annoyer.
Take my advice, dear, and show Mr. Wintersmith the door. He's only an elemental after all.
Tiffany glanced at the door.
Give him the boots, dear. Send him packing and change the locks. Let's have summer all year round like the hot countries do. Grapes all over the place, eh? Coconuts on every tree. Ha! When I was in the volcano game, I couldn't move for mangoes. Kiss goodbye to snow and fog and slush. Have you got the thingy yet?
The thingy? Said Tiffany, looking worried.
It'll turn up, I dare say, said Annoyer. I hear it can be a bit tricky to, Oops! I hear rattling. Must fly. Don't worry, I won't tell him where you are.
She vanished. So did the smoke. Not knowing what else to do, Tiffany ladled out a plate of hearty meat and vegetables and ate it. So, she could see gods now, and they knew about her, and everyone wanted to give her advice. It was not a good idea to come to the attention of those in high places, her father had said. But it was impressive. In love with her, eh? And telling everyone. But he was really an elemental, not a proper god at all. All he knew was how to move wind and water around. Even so, ha! Some people have elementals running after them. Oh, yes, how about that? If people were stupid enough to dance around with girls who painted watercolours to lead honest men to their doom, well, she could be haughty to people who were almost gods. She ought to mention that in a letter, except, of course, that she wasn't going to be writing to him now. Ha! And a few miles away, Old Mother Blackcap, who made her own soap out of her animal fat and potash, made, indeed, from plant ashes, felt a bar of soap snatched from her hand just as she was about to boil some sheets. The tub of water froze solid, too. Being a witch, she immediately said, "There's a strange thief about." And the Wintersmith said, "Potash enough to make a man."